Oh, look, it got repaired already. Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:02 p.m. It's Monday, May 3rd, 2021. Before we begin, I want to thank Shannon McCain, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Tom Raymond from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Vance. I thought I saw Representative Christ Tompkins, and then he disappeared. Representative Drummond, my vice chair, Representative Snyder, and myself, Representative Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. It is Representative Christ Tompkins. He's here, too. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 87, Electric-Assisted Bicycles, sponsored by Representative Wool. This is the first meeting of the bill in the House, first hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. As those of you who served on the House Judiciary Committee during the 31st legislative session may remember, we heard a version of this bill in May 2019 and moved the bill from committee. Here to present the bill is Representative Wool and his staff, Ashley Carrick. Please come forward, identify yourselves for the record, and you may begin your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the House Judiciary Committee. My name is Adam Wool, representative from District 5 in Fairbanks. As you stated, this committee has heard this bill in previous legislatures, and many of the legislators at this table have heard the bill in the past. It did pass the House floor last year and was on its way to the Senate when we ran out of time due to COVID. HB 87 defines electric-assisted bicycles in statute. Currently, there's no description, and e-bikes can be regulated as electric personal motor vehicles. Motor vehicles are motor-driven cycles. Basically, we have a lot of laws about motorized vehicles, but nothing for electric-assist bicycles. 44 states now define e-bikes in statute. Some states use a three-tier system that allows for delineation of different classes of electric bikes. I believe this started in California. Europe does not use this type of system. They basically have e-bike or non-e-bike. For the purposes of this bill here, I'm only talking about bicycles that require pedal assistance. So you must pedal the bicycle to get the assistance from the motor. The three-tiered system that you will probably hear about in this committee has one extra tier called the second tier that is pedal, that doesn't require pedal assistance. So with throttle only, the bicycle will move. It does require operable pedals. Anyhow, this effort to put in statute electric bicycles is supported by many local municipalities. Municipality of Anchorage also added a definition for low-speed electric bikes in 2018. E-bikes would be defined through the bill to include bicycles that are designed to travel with not more than three wheels in contact with the ground, have fully operable pedals for human propulsion, equipped with an electric motor that has a power output of not more than 750 watts, provides assistance only when the rider is pedaling, and ceases to provide assistance to the rider when the bicycle reaches a max speed of 28 miles per hour. So you have to pedal. It has a motor limited to 750 watts, and it doesn't provide any more assistance when you hit 28 miles per hour. That's the essence of it. This bill came about from an individual I knew in Fairbanks that was riding a electric-assisted bicycle home from work. He lives far away and up a long hill, so he uses his electric bike to get home. This individual does not have a driver's license. He was stopped by the police, and they told him he couldn't ride his bicycle home because he doesn't have a license to operate a motorized vehicle. That was the impetus for this bill several years ago, and we're still working on it, but hopefully this legislature we can pass it. So with that, my staff, Ashley Carrick, will put herself on the record and introduce the slideshow.
Thank you. For the record, Ashley Carrick, staff to Representative Wool. And I was just going to walk through a brief presentation and then go through the sectional for this bill.
I'll note just before you start that Representative Eastman arrived at 107. Please proceed.
So on slide two of the presentation, there are three basic goals of HB 87. First is to regulate electric-assisted bicycles as bicycles and to define them as such. Second is to update statute to reflect that e-bikes are an emerging area of transportation for many and to reflect those technological advances. And third is to bring clarity to consumers and retailers on Alaska's electric-assisted bicycle laws. As Representative Wool mentioned, there are a few parts to this definition. First is that an e-bicycle needs to travel with no more than three wheels in contact with the ground, have fully operating pedals, and be equipped with an electric motor that has a power output of not more than 750 watts, and importantly, which ceases to provide assistance when a rider is not pedaling, and which can reach a maximum speed of 28 miles per hour, again, while pedaling.
And note Representative Kirka joined us at 108. Please proceed.
On slide three, we have an updated map. This was just very recently updated by NCSL, reflecting the states that do define an electric bicycle in statute. As you can see, the green states are those which define an e-bike, similar to the definition provided in this legislation. The states in yellow are those which define an e-bike and also have the three-tier classification system, which Rep. Wool touched upon briefly. And as you can see, there are only six states, Alaska is one of them, which do not currently have a statute related to defining electric-assisted bicycles. On this next slide, slide four, we're looking at an example of an electric-assisted bicycle. As you can see, there's just a few components to these bicycles. They do have an electric motor. In order to be a bicycle, they need to have fully operable pedals, and often there will be a battery component that can be seen on the bicycle. However, I do want to note, just moving over to slide five, that electric bicycles are technologically advancing, and they look more and more like a standard bike you would see anywhere else on a trail or sidewalk or road. So the components of the bike can be internal, and it can be hard to identify an electric bike just by looking at it. And this picture just shows an example of another kind of electric bicycle. And again, just to bring home the point that these electric-assisted bicycles are not electric scooters or mopeds. The two pictures shown here do not have operating pedals. The picture on the right, you can see there's pedals. However, pedal assistance is not required for that particular mode of transportation. And additionally, on electric scooters or mopeds or dirt bikes, other kinds of transportation devices, the engine size will vary pretty tremendously between different models. And finally, and before we take questions, we're just hoping to walk through the sectional for this bill. And the sectional starts out, section one defines, states that the definition of motor vehicles excludes electric-assisted bicycles. Section two states that these bicycles should be regulated the same as bicycles in regards to operating on ways, paths, or other areas. Section 3 states that they should be regulated as bicycles in terms of rules of the road and under existing municipal ordinances that allow for guidance related to bicycles. Section 4 states that electric-assisted bicycles are not required to be registered as a motor vehicle. Sections 5 through 7 state that e-bikes are not under the definition of electric personal motor vehicles, or motor-driven cycles, respectively. Section 8 adds the definition of an e-bike into statute that has been discussed in this bill. And finally, Section 9 states that electric-assisted bicycles are to be regulated as bicycles in regard to public use areas as well. And with that, we'd be happy to take any questions from the committee.
Just one question from the chair, and then I'll turn it over to other committee members. Is this changed significantly from the bill that we heard in the last legislature?
To the chair, no. This bill is the same as what was heard in the previous legislature.
Thank you. Questions from Representative Snyder.
Thank you. I have a couple. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at some of the supporting documentation, the one specifically with the blue bar at the top, Alaska's e-bike law. And I see in the second bullet it says e-bike riders must carry an operator's license. Is this different? I guess I'm trying to understand the supporting documentation in the context of.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Snyder. This bill will not require that someone have an operator's license. That was sort of the point of me introducing it, was that a resident of Fairbanks was told he needed a valid driver's license to ride the bicycle and therefore wasn't allowed to ride at home. So this is basically, it regulates e-bikes like bicycles. Now, that being said, if a municipality or a park service or something wanted to make a rule for their, or wherever they have control over, they might say, you can ride your bicycle here, but you can't ride an e-bike. But as far as the state's concerned, they would be regulated just the same as bicycles.
Thank you. Follow up. Thank you. I came away from the introduction with the impression that there was ambiguity in the need for an operator's license, but it seemed like there wasn't ambiguity here, so I was trying to understand which was the correct answer. Thank you.
Further questions, or that's all?
I have additional, but on a different topic.
Go ahead.
I've never ridden a electric-assisted bicycle before. Do they make noise?
Through the chair, Representative Snyder, I have ridden one, and no, they don't make noise. They make as much noise as a bicycle, so you don't hear the motor. But when you pedal, you go a little faster than you normally would with the same level of exertion. So they're fun to ride. They're great for going up hills especially, but they don't make any noise.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you remember what the vote was for in the House for this bill last legislature, or ballpark?
Through the chair, Representative Christ-Tompkins, I'd say 35-5. It wasn't close. I think it was overwhelmingly supported, but I can't remember exactly.
Thank you. Follow up.
Representative Christ-Tompkins.
And as I think, you know, I've been approached on the classification scheme, and can you, the bill doesn't have that as currently drafted, a bunch of states do, presumably that was an intentional decision not to incorporate that in the bill. Can you speak more to what you see as the relative merits of, I guess this is sort of a narrower definition of e-bikes versus having a broader tiered definition of e-bikes?
Yeah, through the chair. I mean, Representative Christ-Tompkins, this is an important question, and we've been approached to amend our own bill to put the three-tier classification system in. Initially, when we were drafting this legislation, I wasn't even aware of the three-tier system, and I was more thinking of a standard e-bike, certainly the ones I've been exposed to, where you actually have to pedal to get the assistance, and if you stop pedaling, you still coast and move like a regular bicycle, but you don't get the assistance. And I was just speaking to someone from an e-bike store in Anchorage, and he gave me a little of the history, and during public testimony, this person will call in. But the three-tier system started in California, and I think it's just been adopted by many states because it had already existed. And as I said earlier, Europe doesn't use that three-tier system, and I believe they've had legislation for a long time for e-bikes. My rationale was initially, because I don't want it defined as a motor vehicle or a motor, you know, a standalone motorized vehicle, that really it's still a bicycle. And in my sort of old school world, a bicycle, you have to pedal. And if you stop pedaling, you don't get the motorized assistance. I haven't ridden what's called a class two, which is throttle only, which can go up to 20 miles per hour without pedaling. I'm not saying these aren't valid and well-liked machines. Again, I was told anecdotally they take up about 10% of the e-bikes sold nationally or even in Alaska. 80% are the type one, which is pedal assist with a lower max speed. and then the type 3 is pedal assist with a higher max speed. And we're using the definition for type 3 since it will encompass both the higher and the lower speed. The pedal assist, non-pedal assist, I mean, it's almost a question that, you know, like I said, I'm more used to pedaling a bike to make it go, so I'm happy to have the assistance. And this is just me hypothesizing what could happen, but if a kid got on a type 2 one that and had throttle only power, could go 20 miles an hour, and wasn't pedaling but didn't necessarily know how to navigate a certain area, and you know, some people when they panic on a situation with a throttle can squeeze or pull back the wrong way. I know my kid's been on a snow machine in that type of situation, and they tend to squeeze the throttle when they're scared. And you know, I think of it more as a safety thing. I don't know if that even happens, and it may be, you know, I guess I'd have to look more into that if there's sort of accidental throttle-only incidents where a kid's on a sidewalk and they're going too fast and they run into a car or something. But and Alaska doesn't have a helmet law. This bill does not incorporate a helmet law, so I don't really want to make people wear helmets. Even motorcycles in Alaska don't require helmets, but I think they're a good idea. I guess to cut to the chase and answer your question with the Class 2, I just feel it should have to be pedaled. And I know after it passed on the House, some of our colleagues came up to me and sort of reiterated, you have to pedal this, right? And I said, yes. And they said, good. I wouldn't have supported it otherwise. So I don't know if I'd lose a bunch of support by putting the throttle-only option on there. But you know, I'm open to discussion.
Follow-up?
Representative Christ.
And with the Class 2 class of bikes, just trying to think about sort of what the, I don't know, relative comparisons are, absent encompassing Class 2 bikes into the e-bike definition, those bikes would then be classified potentially as motor vehicles?
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, I think they would almost be in the sort of gray area where e-bikes are now. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, like I say, it's worthy of the discussion. And I was just on the phone with the e-bike seller, and although it's a small percentage of bikes that are sold of that style, sometimes people that are older or have joint problems will pedal for a while and then want to not pedal for a while. Totally understandable. And I guess that being said, I wouldn't want that particular class of bicycle, if it is sold, to not be defined. So I'm almost talking myself out of my first guiding principle, which was you have to pedal it. And I know they are sold. It's not like they're not. There's hardly any sold. There are some sold. They're in the minority, but the value would be that it would be defined.
Follow up,
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. Yeah, that makes sense. And just to the status quo, absent passage of this bill in whatever form it might pass, have you heard more anecdotes similar to the one in Fairbanks that inspired carrying this bill? Like, to what, just how sort of arbitrary is enforcement on a local level towards, like, oh, this person gets cited for not having a driver's license versus in this town people don't give a rip about whether people are on electric assisted bikes?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, no, I haven't. That was the one time. And this individual had lost his license due to bad behavior with a car, and so maybe he was a known individual to the law enforcement. I don't know, but I haven't heard any more stories like that. But this is a true story. He did tell me that he was riding home and was told he couldn't ride this motorized vehicle because he didn't have a current driver's license. So I certainly wouldn't want that to happen again, and I don't know if that's widespread or if that was just a one-off.
Final follow-up.
Representative Kreis Tompkins, we might not hold you to the final follow-up, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the classification-based approach, if you have different, to the extent that you're familiar with this in other states, for states that have the class-based approach, does that, and I don't mean for this to be a leading question because I truly don't know the answer, does that lead, does that offer the opportunity that, say, Class 2 e-bikes can be treated or regulated in a different way than, like, the Class 1s or the Class 1s and 3s? Or
Through the chair, Representative Kreis Tompkins, I don't know that there's some that treat Class 2 on their own outside of e-bikes. I think the simplest way, if you didn't want to go to separate classes, would you just be, say, an electric bicycle, an e-bike, is a bicycle that has a motor of up to a certain size, of up to a certain speed, that has operable pedals. So they do pedal, the bike moves, but if you stop pedaling, there's, you know, a power assist function. And I think that's what some states do that kind of melds those two together. But I don't know of any that separate the Class 2 from the Class 1 and 3. But I haven't done the research on that. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Representative Snyder.
I will pass while I figure out part of my question.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair. I think you sell yourself a little bit short. Looking at my records, your bill passed 36-0.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman, does that mean you voted for it?
You did.
I did vote for it, in fact.
That I remember.
which leads to my question.
It's a rare event sometimes.
Could you please speak to the changes in Section 8 and 9 of the bills from the previous version?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, it's my understanding that our bill had not changed from its most recent version from the last legislature.
All right, let me share you what I've been given as far as changes, and then if you can take a quick look and see if it matches what you're looking at too.
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, I see in Section 8, line 16.3, instead of ceases to provide, the bill says stops providing. Is this the change that is being referenced?
Section 8 and 9, and are those substantive changes, or what's the effect of those changes is going to be what I'd like to know.
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, I would have to take a closer look, but my guess is this may just be a difference between legislative legal drafters in terms of language.
Representative Snyder, do you have a question? Are you live? You. Oh, wait, actually, Representative Drummond was ahead of you. I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, referring to your to the Alaska's e-bike law, the sheet with the blue bar across the top. So this is the current state of the law as it pertains to all electric bikes in the state.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, can you rephrase your question?
Alaska's e-bike law. It says at the top, Alaska's e-bike law for the road. And I'm looking specifically at bullet item 2 that says e-bike riders must carry an operator's license. Is this the current state of the law in Alaska?
Through the chair to Representative Drummond, technically right now, because e-bikes fall into a gray area, they could be regulated as motor vehicles, and it could be required that they have a license. Of course, the municipality of Anchorage, for example, has established a definition and an ordinance for e-bikes, and so it wouldn't be the case in the municipality of Anchorage. However, because this is a gray area, that's probably why the language from People for Bikes says requires an operator's license, because it's unclear, and it could be easy to interpret that they need to be regulated as motor vehicles, in which case you would need a license.
Follow up?
Representative, actually, before Jeffrey Schmitz from the Department of Motor Vehicles is on the line. Mr. Schmitz, did you hear Representative Drummond's question and Ms. Carrick's answer, and can you provide any insight on that?
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is Jeffrey Schmitz for the record, DMV Director for the State of Alaska. And I'm sorry, could you please repeat the question?
Mr. Schmitz, I am referring to a document that is in my packet, and I don't know if you have it. It's a single page from peopleforbikes.org, and it's titled Alaska's E-Bike Law at the top on a blue, in a blue bar.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm sorry, I don't have reference to that particular document that you're taking a look at. I couldn't comment on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Hold on. Mr. Schmitz, actually, you don't have the paper, but I'll read it to you, and then you probably can comment. There's the heading is Alaska's e-bike law for the road, and then it says, in Alaska, an e-bike is defined as a motor-driven cycle, e-bikes are not subject to the same rules of the road as traditional bicycles. What's your perspective on, is that an accurate statement of Alaska law as you understand it with regard to e-bikes?
Sure. Mr. Chair, committee members, with respect to laws pertaining to bikes, that really sort of falls outside of the scope of DMV. In fact, I think this bill even defines to say that because this is an electric bike, it doesn't fall within the realm of DMV, and that would be our perspective. And our perspective is, if it's considered to be a bike, it doesn't fall under any of our rules or statutes with respect to motor vehicles or licenses or anything like that. So it really is difficult for me to be able to comment on that because it's outside of our scope.
Representative Drummond, any further follow-up either for the bills? Actually, Representative Wolter, do you want to comment on that question?
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I meant to do that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The part of the reason we're having this legislation is because it falls into a gray area. A motorized vehicle is fairly well defined, and for different vehicles, you need licenses and or you can't ride them on public roads. So, if you want to ride a four-wheeler, you can ride one, but as soon as you're on a road, you're breaking the law technically. You're not supposed to ride a motorized vehicle, a snow machine, or a motorcycle, or anything. Some motorized vehicles are street legal, and then you can ride them on the road, in which case you'd need a license. But there's all kinds of laws that kick in when you're on a motorized vehicle, age and, operating under the influence, these kind of things kick in when you're operating a motorized vehicle. But e-bikes, and the reason this proposing this bill is to define them as not a motorized vehicle. As long as they only go up to a certain size and a certain speed, they will still be classified as a bicycle.
Actually, follow up.
Representative Drummond. Yeah,
I guess I'm confused as to the source of this document. And it does state that e-bike riders must carry an operator's license. They are not subject to registration or insurance requirements. Helmets are not required. 14-year age minimum for e-bike use, as well as e-bikes are not allowed on sidewalks and bike paths. So is that perhaps what the municipality of Anchorage sorted out with this with its ordinance?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I don't know that those things are actually laws, and I would guess that they're not. there may be a municipality law, but I don't even think the municipality law goes to require age limits and so on. So I guess I'd have to follow that up with the, I don't have that document in front of me, the People for Bikes organization and Ms. Carrickus.
And Representative Drummond on public testimony, which we'll get to here probably in a few minutes. There's Logeman is here with the People for Bikes Coalition, a group that is based in Boulder, Colorado, and he may be able to answer your question, but that's the source of the
document.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very supportive of this. I just want to make sure I understand everything because it's the first time I'm learning about it. From my read here, Class 1 and Class 2 bikes tend to go up to 20 miles per hour. It's the Class 3 that can hit up to 28 from my reading of the supporting documentation. Is there anything in here that would prohibit, say, a municipality distinguishing on our, say, in Anchorage, our extensive trail system, that this trail is for this type of bike and this trail is for that? I'm just thinking of my little guys when they were just learning biking and bike etiquette. I would not want to be on a trail with a bike going 28 miles an hour, and wanted to make sure that they'd be able to to separate trails, that this wouldn't keep them from doing that.
Through the chair, Representative Snyder, a municipality or anyone who controls a trail system can make their own rules for that system. I think a lot of trails do allow e-bikes that allow bicycles. The 28 miles per hour is where the pedal, where the motorized assist would stop. It doesn't mean they have to go that fast, and someone going downhill on a trail is going to pedal and operate it much like they would a regular bicycle. I think I was just on the phone with someone that said national parks for Class 2, you're allowed to ride them in, but you can't ride them in certain areas. And the other thing is, one rule is you can ride a Class 2, but you must pedal it. So that's really hard to enforce. I think the distinction between the classes is hard to enforce. And but I think for the purposes of this bill, this would just define an e-bike as a bicycle. So if you can ride a bicycle on a sidewalk, you can ride an e-bike on a sidewalk. If you can ride a bicycle on a street, you can ride an e-bike on a street. But a municipality can make more subtle adjustments to that.
Thank you.
Representative Kirka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My staff and I were looking at this before we came down here, and looking at some other stuff related to it. Seems like e-bikes are kind of a, I don't want to say newfangled invention, but for a while now we've had the possibility of, I know family who've done this, is strapped on a little motor on top of a bicycle, and when they get tired of pedaling, they can kick the motor on and get over the hill or whatever. It would seem to me if we were going to expand the classification beyond pedal-powered only, in terms of the assistance, and even then, I kind of wonder, you would have, to be fair, we would need to broaden the scope to be consistent, to, as long as we're, you know, constraining within a consistent standard in terms of speed, or horsepower, to gasoline-powered, which are very light, efficient. Either you can buy a bicycle with them, or for a couple hundred, for $1,200 or a couple hundred bucks, or you can just buy the motor for a couple hundred bucks to have to strap to your regular bicycle. But we saw several of those readily available on the market. It just seemed to me, for consistency's sake, that would need to be considered. Is that something you thought about with this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Kirka, no, that isn't something we've thought about. I'm sure gasoline-powered motors that assist pedals exist. I mean, the moped that we showed earlier was popular many decades ago, and I certainly remember when those came about, and you'd pedal them and then the motor kicks in and it's like a 50cc motor, and then you can throttle only and go all, as long as you have gas in the tank, you can go pretty far and pretty fast. And those to me are more in the motorized vehicle category. I hadn't thought about putting gasoline-powered motors into this category. I think that, for one, they make noise. Electric bikes don't. They would. I don't know how popular they are. Electric bikes are gaining exponentially in popularity, and I just want to keep up with the trends. And there's stores that sell e-bikes all over the place. I don't know about the electric, the gasoline assist bicycle, and I could see that being more powerful and faster and more like a scooter or a moped, I guess. So I wasn't considering those, and I'm honestly not too interested in considering those. So.
Follow up?
Yeah, follow up. I appreciate
it. Representative Kirker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that, Representative Wohl. I can understand maybe the objection because of the noise, and certainly the market is shifting to electric because of its stealth and quietness. And in terms of enforcement, it certainly would be a lot harder to enforce with electric, and maybe that's why the shift has gone there, is because it's kind of flying under the radar, so to speak. But if you're going to, I guess, break the classification you've created to be pedal powered only, you would just for consistency's sake, to not discriminate, we would need to include the gasoline power assisted. I know my staff, when he pulled up on Amazon or wherever he pulled them up online, was really excited about getting one. Just a few minutes ago after having looked them up because of your bill.
Well, through the chair, Representative Kirk, I don't know if I would call it discrimination by not allowing gasoline power to be strapped to a bicycle equally as electric. The one thing I'll say is electric bikes will recharge simply by hitting the brakes going downhill, so you don't have to go to a gas station and fill up. I guess to me it's, I mean, they're both motorized and they're both motor assist, and I'm not that familiar with the gasoline style assist that on a regular bicycle with operable pedals. So other than a moped, which we've already said is not what we want to define as a electric vehicle.
I will note that sometime in the last few years I was out in over a mountain biking setting, and somebody came by in a gasoline or some kind of a fuel motor assisted bicycle, and it was surprisingly noisy and kind of unexpected. It's one thing you expect to see mountain bikes, but you don't really expect to see mountain bikes with a motor going along in the outdoors. Representative Eastman, you had some questions, and after Representative Eastman finished, we'll go to public hearing, because we do have some people that are testifying that may have some information that will help our discussion. So, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And just ask for clarification. I know the 28-mile-an-hour limit was mentioned, and that appears on page 4, line 17. And I just wanted to clarify whether it is simply that the assistance is what drives that 28-hour limit, or is it the miles an hour themselves? So if someone was, say, going 29 miles an hour, even without assistance, is that something that they could get hemmed up with law enforcement for?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, no. Like any bicycle, if you're going down a hill and pedal fast, like the chair probably does occasionally, and can exceed, you know, 30 or 40 miles per hour, that's fine on a regular bicycle. It's fine on an e-bike. Just the assistance from the motor will stop once you hit 28. So you can go 29 or 30. You'll just have to do all that yourself without the assistance.
Representative Vance, do you want to wait till after we hear public testimony, or do you want to get your question in now?
Well, I just have one question for Ledge Legal.
Go ahead.
That I think might be a benefit.
Ledge Legal is actually not on the line, unfortunately, but you can ask the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought it might be a benefit for the public input. And the question that I have for Ledge Legal that the maker of the bill could inquire about is, in their legal opinion, is there a benefit to dividing out the 1, 2, and 3 classifications of electric assisted bicycle, or does the broader definition as in the bill fit the future need to cover all of them as the intent? I just want to know legally what is their perspective, because I foresee that there's going to be more use of electric bicycles in. Is the broad definition sufficient, or is there a specific reason that we would need to outline them? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So if you can touch base with Ledge Legal and get back to us at the next hearing, okay. Or by in writing before.
Thank you.
I would just broadly note that my own perspective is that 28 miles an hour is a fairly fast speed on a bicycle. If you're 28 miles an hour on a bike trail, you're going to be passing most everybody unless it's a downhill. And so that's one of the things I've always thought curious. I don't have a real question, but just an observation. I do know that if you're going down something like Thompson Pass, you don't have to pedal to get up around 40 miles an hour. And if there are crosswinds going, that can be certainly
and if
for adrenaline running, if nothing else.
Yeah, and if I may add, Mr. Chair, to get to 28 miles per hour with a motor assist, you still have to pedal. Now, I don't know what fraction of that speed is you and what fraction is the motor. So I think you can't just slightly move the pedals. You have to actually be exerting some effort yourself and also with the motor to get to 28.
So actually a question that you might, well, actually let's get the public testimony because they might have the answer. So I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony on House Bill 87. First person in, actually, I see no one in the room to provide public testimony. First person online is Dale Banks calling from Homer. Mr. Banks, if you would identify yourself, state any affiliation, and you can proceed. We limit public testimony to 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you. I'm Dale Banks from Homer. I'd like to thank the sponsors for the research and promotion of this. I'm generally in favor of HB 87. And I'm glad to see it moving forward. Sorry to see it die in committee last year, but there are some points I wanted to make about it. I own an e-bike shop in Homer, and it'll be great to be able to advise my customers of actual regulations instead of the gray area that bikes are in now, e-bikes are in. My main point is addressing what you guys talked about on page 4, line 14, 34A, number 2, where it says provides assistance only when the rider is pedaling. All e-bikes that we sell have a pedal assist sensor, so when you start pedaling, it kicks in the motor. Most of them are 750 watts or less, but most of them also have a throttle. So typically, what I'm seeing on the market is most of them are coming with a pedal assist sensor and a throttle. So the language you have here is going to exclude this type of bike that we've been selling for a year or so, and other places in the state are selling, so there's a lot of riders out there. Ours are all limited to 20 miles an hour as they go out the door, which is typical of Class 1 or Class 2 in California, and seems appropriate for bike paths and everything like that. So if, you know, during your presentation, number 2 is to update statutes, and I think your point number 2, updating statutes, should reflect the reality of what's out there on the market. I can talk a bit about why they have throttle and when people use it. A lot of our customers are older, and they need the assist when these bikes are heavier than normal bikes. If you're at a stop sign or trying to get across the street, and especially if it's pointed uphill, the throttle is very useful. If you've ridden an e-bike, you know that you have to pedal maybe a rotation or so before the electric motor kicks in. So mostly I see my customers not simply holding the throttle down and zipping down the bike path, but they're actually pedaling. They want to get exercise, but in order to get started, it's useful to have that throttle. So it seems like my suggestion would be to simply delete that number 3 there and regulate this by wattage and speed. Once you cover wattage and speed, that's pretty adequate. I mean, that's how cars on the road are regulated, by speed, not like the components, how many gears they have or how many cylinders they have. They're regulated by speed. So, and to the speed comment, I think 28 is pretty fast. I would be comfortable if this only said 20 miles an hour, because like somebody said, on a bike path, you don't want to get whizzed by at 28 miles per hour by somebody on an e-bike necessarily. We try to teach our customers.
Mr. Banks, I gave you a fair bit past the 2 minutes. I'm 99% sure there's going to be some questions for you, so stay on the line. I know there are going to be questions because I have questions. Questions for Mr. Banks.
Yeah, I had a lot of notes here, and I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I just know there's some questions, and so you'll probably get the same information out. questions, it looks like Representative Christ-Tompkins has a question.
Or even just a comment. Mr. Banks, I hope I got your last name right. If you could, yeah. I think the committee would definitely appreciate your notes in written form if you get a chance, just for reference as we consider this bill later this week.
Can you send us a written summary of your comments?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Banks? I have a couple of questions. In terms of the, again, I don't want you to necessarily reveal your business secrets, but how many e-bikes are you selling a year, and how many of those are 20-mile-an-hour bikes, and how many of those would be what I'll call, for purposes of this discussion, 28-mile-per-hour bikes?
That's fair. We only have a couple of models. There's different motor setups. Some are mid-drive, where the motor is in the crank there and puts the power through the chain, and then there's a hub drive type where the motor is in the rear wheel typically. Some of our mid-drive models can go 28 miles per hour, but those are, I'd say, probably 10% or less of our sales. And when we sell one of those, I advise them that it's probably not going to be riding at that speed, you know, on bike paths or whatnot. But again, there wasn't regulations yet, and I was hoping that there would be. So yeah, I'd say about less than 20 or less than 10%.
And what is the, in terms of the manufacturer's market, are the manufacturers primarily building to the 20 mile per hour assist level? And if so, why is that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, they are primarily doing that, and it's largely based on some of the original regulations, I think, were made in California, and those had that class one and class two system, where it drove a lot of the manufacturers to keep it to 750 watts and keep it to 20 miles per hour. I think California, if I can address the class system a little bit, California, it made it a little bit confusing. This class two is not exactly, I haven't seen e-bikes actually with just the throttle. There probably are some, but typically they're going to have a pedal assist also. So if you have pedal assist and a throttle, it doesn't technically even fall into category two. That's why I'm suggesting just a wattage and a speed type regulation as an umbrella type document, and then localities could, adjust as necessary for different trails and whatnot.
So in terms of how these perform, let's say I'm on a flat trail, so there's no uphill or downhill impact, and I'm on one of these electric assist bicycles, and let's just say that pedaling up to 20, well, actually, let's use a 28 mile per hour example. Getting to 28 miles per hour in the flat is pretty difficult. Do I just hit the throttle if I want to get the bike to go up to 28 as long as I'm pedaling, or does the ability to get up to 28 miles an hour relate in some way to how hard I'm pedaling?
It depends on the bike. So, a mid-drive has a different type of drive. Well, some of them have. They can tell how hard you're pedaling and respond accordingly. Another method is to simply sense that you are pedaling, so it would have a sensor that either knows you're pedaling or you're not pedaling, and would give power accordingly. So again, I think the throttle, most riders are not riding them around like a motorcycle because they're really not fast enough, so they're pedaling and using the throttle when needed to either help them accelerate to get up a hill to get home. Like, we're in Homer, so a lot of people live up on the hill, and that it might stop at the bottom to get their mail, and so to get the bike started, they'll hit that. But then once you start pedaling, the bike knows you're pedaling, and it sends power to the motor, and so that's the usefulness of the throttle.
Okay. And then the last question is that I know in the automobile industry, even though some may criticize the regulatory laws in California about automobiles, the manufacturers all say, love it or leave it, we manufacture to the California standards because they have such a large market and we have to meet that market or it gets too hard to manufacture. Is that kind of what's going on with e-bikes, that California is the biggest market, so to some extent the California regulations are driving what gets manufactured regardless of what's licensed in other states, if you know?
Yes, sir. I think that's correct because it's such a large market there, and it was really exploding. That was one of the areas where it was exploding first, I'd say. And so, and it's a pretty reasonable regulation of 750 watts, and there hasn't been a lot of, it's in, from my perspective, a lot of kickback against that, like saying 500 watts. Some countries, I think Canada has a 500 watt maximum, or maybe it's 350. I'm not sure. But yes, the manufacturers, like I said earlier, they're kind of driven by the regulations in place, and I think it would be wise for us to be consistent with that. People hopefully are trying to shop locally, but if they're going online and ordering an e-bike, they may get it and then realize, oh, this has a throttle. I ordered a 750 watt bike to try to meet these regulations, but it's got a throttle. Do I have to disable it, or am I going to be illegal? Well, if I could make one quick point as far as enforcement, it was brought up. I think it'd be way easier to enforce a speed and a wattage than some kind of component that's really hard to see on a bike.
All right. I think Representative Kurga has a question for you. Go ahead, Representative Kurga.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question could be for the bill sponsor or the Mr. Baker, or both, actually. But I guess the question I would have, and I think the shop owner, Mr. Baker, kind of hinted at this initially, but why do we care what the wattage is? I mean, if the issue should be the speed, I would think. I mean, a heavier bike might need more wattage, and a lighter bike might need less wattage. Why do we even care what the wattage is?
Mr. Banks, why do we care what the wattage is?
Mr. Chairman and committee, I think that's a reasonable question because with my analogy of cars and vehicles on a road, it doesn't matter if you have a 500 horsepower V8. You can only go 25 in a 25 zone, supposedly. I think it's because the higher wattage bikes that I've seen on the market typically are not capped at 20 miles per hour. People really want those to be riding more aggressively, not as like a type of bike that's assisting people that need it, but it's more of a fun adventure bike. You're right. I think your point has some merit, but I think saying 750 watts would keep it pretty simple and also consistent with other states.
Did you want to add anything to that, Representative?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess why limit the wattage? It's because we're classifying these as non-motorized vehicles. And if you start putting bigger and bigger motors on them, they're pretty motorized. As far as the car comparison, yeah, cars vary in their horsepower, but you still have to ride within a certain speed limit. Bicycles typically aren't breaking speed limits, but if you limit the power size, then you know they are not going to go 50 miles per hour, and that's what we don't want. If they go 50, then you're in a motorized vehicle. And just for a comparison, and this may be where the 750 watts came in, it's pretty close to one horsepower, so maybe that's where they came up with 750, but that's all.
Next in the queue, Representative Eastman, you weren't raising your hand for a question, you're just pondering?
I had a question.
Oh, you do have a question. Okay, go ahead. This is for Mr. Banks.
Yes.
Mr. Banks, stay on line. One more question.
Thank you, the chair. Sure. I was wanting to know a little bit more about the starting from a dead stop position where, you know, I'm envisioning a senior citizen who might be, you know, pointed uphill and trying to get going, kind of like you were mentioning earlier. And is there the bikes that you're normally seeing, is it that the person needs to start the bike moving through pedaling motion before that sensor is tripped, or can they simply pedal without the bike moving, which would trip the sensor and then allow the throttle to be activated?
Yes, sir. That's a good question. Well, you can't really pedal without the bike moving unless you're pedaling backwards, and that won't activate the sensor. So in order for the sensors, at least on a lot of the bikes that we sell, to know, the sensitivity is not such that it just moves a little bit, because that would not be very safe. So you need to be pedaling, I'd say, three-quarters of a rotation to sometimes a rotation or a little bit more before it says, okay, the rider's pedaling, now I'm going to apply the power to the motor. So if you do need to, you know, just like I said, get going uphill, it's kind of hard on these bikes because they're, you know, 70, 75 pounds sometimes. So somebody that needs the assist might not be able to get going very easily.
Follow up?
The disincentive to stop at the stop sign on the way up the hill. Representative Eastman.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm picturing. Disincentive from following other laws. Yeah, I guess what I'm picturing then from what you're saying is that, you know, a senior citizen with a heavy bike or you know, a road that's going uphill may have to, in fact, you know, kind of point downhill and get going and then do a 180 in order to get moving. And am I understanding the technology correct?
Yes, sir. If they didn't have a throttle, that would potentially be correct if they weren't strong enough to pedal it enough to have the sensor activate, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next in the queue for public testimony is Wayne Adderhold, also calling from Homer. Mr. Adderhold, if you would identify yourself for the record, state an affiliation, and we limit testimony to 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Thank you, and members of the committee. Wayne Adderhold, representing myself, although I will note that I am a member of the League of American Bicyclists and put myself in 2015 through training to become a league cycling instructor, even though I don't actively teach classes. I'm also a member of the Homer Cycling Club, along with Mr. Banks. I'm 71 years old, so I classify as a senior. I do not own any e-bikes. I own six regular pedal bikes. I do see e-bikes. They've obviously been an up-and-coming thing over the last few years, and there's definitely a need to recognize them in statute so that they aren't in this gray area. And I guess at this point, I'm a proponent of using the three-class system of the People for Bikes, which is, as I understand it, the industry rep or industry association for that for the e-bike industry. I've followed them for a few years. So I think the statute needs to be needs to go through. I listed myself as being partially in favor of this bill. That's because I'm in favor of the recognition of e-bikes by statute. However, I'm concerned about regulation. And one thing to point out, and if you could see me a little while ago, Representative Will was speaking, and he said something about operating them on a sidewalk. It's probably little known, but unless it's been changed in very recent times, 13 AAC 02.420G, as in Geronimo, prohibits the use of a bicycle on a sidewalk in a business district, and it's for a very good reason. It's for the safety of the bicyclist and the pedestrians. So the operation is a big deal with me. If I was teaching you a class, I would teach you that bicyclists fare best when they act and are treated as operators of slower moving vehicles. So right now, the way the bill is written, unless I'm reading it wrong, it would prohibiting operation of an e-bike on a sidewalk. And I'd have a definite problem with that. I know that it also recognizes that municipalities can change that, but there are many
Mr. Adderhold, you're kind of at best in 2 minutes, but you have can you tell us the site on that regulation you just referenced? Repeat that again.
Oh, I have to look it up. I have a little two-page flyer I can send it in, which summarizes bicycle laws in Alaska.
I thought you just read the regulation number during your testimony.
I did, because I had copied it onto my testimony. It's on my written testimony.
Oh, is it that submitted already?
Yeah, that's in there.
Okay. If we've got that already, you don't need to repeat it. Are there questions for Mr. Adderhold? Representative Eastman has a question. Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And just based on your experience, currently does an electric-assisted bicycle or what we're defining as an electric-assisted bicycle, does that fall under the definition of bicycle? Ideally, I'd be asking our attorney, but I don't think we have anybody available.
Well, that's a great question. And I sat in on a session a year or two ago with our police chief because we can see e-bikes coming, and I'm a proponent for bicycling, and we were talking to him about how he was going to deal with things. But at that point, we had to go with the interpretation of People for Bikes, who are basically interpreting the law the way you see it on that flyer. And again, it's an interpretation, so I would use that same interpretation as a motor-driven vehicle.
Representative Vance, get these Homer folks and all the Homer representatives want to ask questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have an extensive cycling group and many, many trails. Hi, Wayne. You mentioned your desire to have the three-tiered system, such as the People's for Bikes, as classified. Can you speak to why you feel that that is beneficial to clarify in our statutes?
Well, marginally, because right now e-bikes aren't classified at all, and when a couple of the dealers came up or brought up this question a couple years ago, and like, we want to know if we're selling people a bicycle that they can use, and by classifying them, at least the buyer knows what they're getting, and it gives a logical way for a regulatory agency, and in this case I would consider the Department of Public Safety would be the ones to actually get into the details of a regulation. So it gives you a good handle on it, and who knows, a year from now that might change. The industry knows better than we do what's happening, but since it came from the industry, I think that's the best definition of e-bikes.
All right, thank you for that.
Thank you. Mr. Adderholt, I don't see any other questions. Thank you for coming and testifying. I will note that at least I know my mother-in-law would compliment you for your restraint in only owning six bicycles.
Thank you. Can I make one last comment real quick?
Very briefly.
Very brief. I'm working with this active transportation group right now, and the Fairbanks group, FAST, the Fairbanks Area Surface Transportation, with Jackson Fox and company, has been working on some much-needed upgrades to the code, the Alaska Administrative Code, and it would make sense to put this in there with that that effort of the Fairbanks group.
Thank you very much. Next, Reed Harris is on my list for questions, but I'll just check. Mr. Harris, did you want to provide any testimony today?
Chair Clayman, thank you. Yeah, if I could just briefly state, I'm the president of the Juneau Mountain Bike Alliance here in Juneau, and we're the local trails organization that deals with bikes on trails. We have a MOU with the City and Borough of Juneau, which owns most of the land with the trails on it around town, and we're fully in support of House Bill 87, the fundamentals of the bill. We also recommend the amendment that I think People for Bikes has been working with the bill sponsor on. Those classifications, although they may have been drafted in California, are now industry standard. When you buy an e-bike at a shop, it has a sticker on it that says this is a class 1, 2, or 3 e-bike. So keeping some sort of standard in place, it appears most of the other states have done that as well, would probably behoove manufacturers as well as buyers. People may buy e-bikes in Alaska, potentially from a shop in Homer or Anchorage or other places, and take them to trails down south, and if they have some sort of strange classification, they may not be aware if they're actually able to use that bike on that trail. From a local perspective, I've spoken with the city, and e-bikes have become really popular. We haven't taken any steps towards classifying which types can be on trails thus far, but the indication I have from CPJ is that they would be interested in looking towards state statute in order to do that, and I imagine a lot of local land managers around the state would do that. So with those comments, I would just say we support the bill, and if there were an amendment coming forth that had those three types of classifications, we would support that as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions for Mr. Harris. Next in the queue, we've got Alex Lagerman calling from Denver, and he actually is with People for Bikes Coalition. But Mr. Lagerman, if you state your name for the record, state your affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Alex Lagerman, and I am here on behalf of the People for Bikes Coalition. People for Bikes Coalition is a Boulder, Colorado-based national trade association for manufacturers, distributors, and suppliers of bicycle products. All types of bicycles, bicycle accessories, components, and including electric bicycles. We are here today in support of House Bill 87, and I'd like to thank Representative Wolf for carrying this bill for 2 years now. This is a very important and much-needed update to Alaska's traffic laws, and we are very much aligned with Representative Wolf's intentions here to define electric bicycles and very clearly state that they are not motor vehicles. and instead are subject to the laws for bicycles. However, we would like to also see some amendments to the bill as it moves forward, the most important being an amendment to the definition of an electric bicycle to recognize the class system, particularly class 2 electric bicycles. Based on the questioning I've been hearing so far, a little bit of additional background may be helpful for the committee as to how this whole system evolved. First off, some of the wattage limitations and parameters you see in the law are actually regulated at the federal level. Electric bicycles are regulated as consumer products by the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and that is where that 750-watt limitation comes in. So to manufacture and sell an electric bicycle in the United States, you need to be complying with that wattage limitation as a matter of federal law, and so that's why the state laws have been done consistently with that. California was the first state to adopt the three-class system, but it's now been adopted in 31 states, so it is an emerging national standard. And as has been mentioned, the bikes are already labeled according to that framework. Class 2 electric bicycles are a very significant portion of the marketplace. While for some types of dealers, it may only be 10% of their sales, for a lot of online vendors or direct-to-consumer vendors, it's their entire business. And I think if you look at the whole market, you're looking at probably at least 30% of the market is Class 2 electric bicycles that are equipped with a throttle.
What was that percentage again?
Unfortunately, I can't break down our sales data by class. We believe it's at least 30% of the marketplace overall.
Please proceed. I'm actually going to relax the time limit because the information he's providing, I think the committee would like to know. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few more notes on what I think is beneficial and important for the classification system. Based on some of the questions that have come up, it's challenging to define with a single definition what an electric bicycle is when you're thinking about all the types of infrastructure and places that you might want that product to be used. And it came out in some questions from the committee. You know, I think someone mentioned they wouldn't like to see a 28-mile-per-hour product on a particular bike path. That wouldn't make sense there. And so, you know, the industry has tried to parse out in the most logical way it can, the different types of products that it's selling based on their motor engagement and their speed. And so, you know, I think it's important that the state law provide local governments with that regulatory framework instead of just creating a broad-based definition and then leaving it to the municipalities or the counties to come up with their own standards about what an electric bicycle is. Instead, by codifying the three classes, you can give them that framework to develop their own regulation.
And Mr. Lugerman, are you on a speakerphone by chance?
I am. Is it a little fuzzy?
What's that?
Yes.
Can you go off the speakerphone? You're getting a lot of, yes. We're getting a lot of static.
Is that better?
100%.
Thank you. Sorry about that. So again, the class system provides that framework for them, and also as you see more products being introduced into the soft surface trail realm, the difference between class 1 and class 2 e-bikes I think will be very fundamentally important for land managers, whether it be at state parks or county open space associations, to be able to regulate electric bicycles on their trails, because there's going to be a lot of places where throttle-equipped bikes are simply not appropriate, whereas pedal-assist bikes may be. One final note of the things I caught in the questions earlier, I think there was a question about where that 28-mile-per-hour upper limit came from for Class 3 electric bicycles. That was actually done to align the United States with Europe. Europe has two different types of sort of e-bike classifications based on their speed. They regulate them at 25 kilometers per hour for the lower speed ones, which is about 60 miles per hour, and 45 kilometers per hour, which is 28 miles per hour for the higher speed ones. So the decision to
specify that higher pedal assist speed was actually done to align us with Europe and make it so these higher speed pedal assist bicycles are going to be dual compatible with both the European continent and the North America.
Okay.
With that, I think I just have your questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Logeman. Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the People for Bikes document in front of me, but it was referenced earlier in the committee about some reference to operator licenses. And if you caught that committee discussion previously, could you perhaps clarify what People for Bikes was referring to, given that the DMV director and the bill sponsor both were unfamiliar with that operator license reference?
And just for reference, Mr. Logeman, there's a sheet that your organization published that starts at that Alaska's e-bike law that has some Alaska-specific references, and that's what Representative Christ-Tompkins is asking about.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Christ-Tompkins. I have that in front of me, and I apologize for causing the confusion. You know, I do think the reason we're here today is because there is uncertainty around the state of Alaska law, and we did our best to interpret and analyze the laws of all 50 states and develop user guides for people so that they would understand what their rights and duties were under the laws of those different states. And based on our reading of the statutes, it seemed to us that an electric bicycle would be considered a motor-driven bicycle under the current statutes, and that's how it is regulated. We'd of course defer to a different interpretation from DMV if they thought that was incorrect. The only thing I would also note is we did vet our interpretations against academic studies that had been done, namely one from Portland State University that had done a 50-state legal survey as well that reached the same conclusion. So this was our best interpretation based on the current state of Alaska statutes to determine how e-bikes would be regulated.
Thank you. And just a comment, I suppose that maybe underscores the need for clarity in this arena.
Well, and it's noteworthy that and asked a question about this very topic, DMV took no position. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm looking at the guideline paper that Alaska's e-bike law provided, and it's mentioned here, e-mountain bike as well. Is there any differentiation between those three classifications and an electric mountain bike?
Yes, thank you for the question. Essentially what we mean, at least when we refer to electric mountain bikes, are class one electric mountain bikes, and those are the only types of mountain bikes that People for Bikes has advocated for any treatment as a mountain bike in a mountain bike type environment due to its lower speed and the fact that it's pedal assist only. From a manufacturing perspective, the class one electric bicycles are the ones that are being manufactured and equipped like mountain bikes in terms of, you know, having dual suspension and the gearing and the types of similar features that you would find on a traditional mountain bike. So we would expect that the term electric mountain bike and class one e-bike become sort of synonymous in the sense that that's what people view as an electric mountain bike.
All right, thank you for that clarification.
I don't see any other questions, and I will note that since we have nobody from the Fairbanks area on our committee, and that the person that represents Yakutat is also not on our committee, the e-bike list of great brides in Alaska that doesn't include anyone from any of our districts is a little concerning, but we probably won't hold it against you. Next in the queue for public testimony, Carrie Shifley, calling in from Anchorage. If you would state your name and any affiliation, you proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Carrie Shifley. I'm here representing Alaska E-Bike, which is a business I started here in Anchorage back in 2014 to specialize in the sale of electric bicycles. I'm also a enthusiast and advocate for biking. I serve on the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee for the Anchorage Municipality Active Transportation, AMAP there. And so I approach things as a, you know, I want to see more people riding bikes. And the electric bikes, Anchorage, we helped classify them as bicycles in 2016, sort of mirroring the Consumer Product Safety Code. And I think that's a great case study of how all the classes can be ridden within the existing bicycle framework without necessarily having the local regulations regarding the three classes, because that federal Consumer Product Safety Code does regulate what is a bicycle. It keeps it under 750 watts, operable pedals, and a maximum throttle speed of 20 miles per hour. I think much like automobiles on the road, the different road styles, or in this case, the different trail types and the traffic on those trails will dictate trail speed. And speed is something that is very user, individual to each user is, you know, what is fast, what is slow. I would say the majority of e-bike users are not looking to go fast, but would rather have the assistance to get them up, you know, take Homer up East End Road, where if we limit it to 250 watts, like Europe has, they may, and we take away the throttle. There are some bikes, the hub motor style bikes especially, that it, the pedal assist does not kick in until a rotation of the pedals. So you're asking someone to, like Dale had mentioned, pedal a 70-pound bike on their own up a hill before the power kicks in. So there is some instances where that throttle can be a positive for folks. I see the throttle as being really helpful for folks using it more for mobility issues. With hip or knee injuries, it allows them to go ride a bicycle, pedal. You can always pedal. There's always, you know, the option to ride it like a bike. But then if you get to a point where you can no longer rotate your knee or your hip, then you have that throttle to sort of safely get you back home. And so I am, you know, I do believe that we should be allowing the throttle-powered bike, you know, to be within the framework. I think the mentioning on the People for Bikes, not having any of the great rides in Alaska is interesting. We've been trying to get that information through to them for the last several years since 2016. All of Anchorage trails within the municipality of Anchorage on municipal land, I think that's an important fact there, are allowed e-bikes. They, you can have e-mountain bikes. You could have a class 2 bike on the soft surface trails. You can have a class 3 bike on the soft surface trails. And what I have found is that all three types of bikes are going to be traveling roughly the same manner on the trails, because you can't throttle down a trail that was built for biking and have a good time. You're going to come in too fast in the corner, and you're going to learn right away that you can't just hold the throttle down. You do have to ride it like a bicycle. And so I have found that the trails do dictate a lot of that speed. And then...
Okay, Mr. Shifley, I'm going to go ahead and let you wind up your remarks, because we've heard from a lot of folks and you're pretty consistent. Go ahead with your conclusion, please.
I think I haven't actually been shown House Bill 87, but I know working with Adam Wolf over the Representative Wolf over the past few years, I think I am for this classifying electric bikes as bicycles. They are currently unclassified on the state, and that does create a weird position where state parks is sort of saying that they don't want the bikes on the land, but they also aren't not allowing the bikes on the land. So it puts it in a really weird spot. And with that, I would just say, you know, I'm a proponent for classifying electric bikes as bicycles. The three-tier system is good, but I don't know if we do need it necessarily in Alaska, because the marketplace has already kind of commanded that three-tier system does exist.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't see any questions, Mr. Shifley, but thank you very much for taking the time to come and provide public testimony today. I don't see anyone else on the call-in list for public testimony, so we're going to close public testimony on House Bill 87. Are there other questions for members of the committee before Representative Eastman has a question, Ms. Carrick, before you get to weigh in. Representative Eastman, your question.
Thank you. And I'm looking at Section 5 of the bill. And I know the statute being referenced refers in Section 5 to a self-balancing vehicle with two non-tandem wheels. And I'm just wondering how broad is that, should that be? Are we only trying to talk about Segways there, or is the intent to talk about more than that, say, a self-balancing vehicle that can't go more than 15 miles an hour that has three wheels, for example?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman. So the definition for electric personal motor vehicle is a mobility device self-balancing with two non-tandem wheels designed to transport one person with an electric propulsion system and a maximum speed of not more than 15. So, you know, when I was talking with Ledge Legal about the various definitions and the differences between a electric personal motor vehicle versus a motor-driven cycle, etc., the only specific example that we could come up with, myself and Ledge Legal, of an electric personal motor vehicle was a Segway, just because the definition for a motor-driven cycle is a little bit broader and it encompasses most things that wouldn't be specific to a Segway or a two-wheeled device. There may be other examples, though.
And follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
And so where, you know, when I see someone at the grocery store on some type of electrical conveyance, what category does that generally fall into?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, it would definitely depend, but I think many non-e-bikes that have, say, a throttle, some of the other disqualifying factors for an e-bike would probably be categorized as a motor-driven cycle, as that encompasses mopeds and scooters and dirt bikes and other very small engine.
What about the power carts that you see in the grocery store? These are not on the streets. This is for people with disabilities that need a cart that's electrically driven that they drive around the grocery store. Where does that fit?
Yeah, to the chair, I would have to look into that specific example. My guess, just looking at the definition of a motor-driven cycle, is it could fall under that category.
Why doesn't it fall into subparagraph 12 on the prior page of electric personal motor vehicle?
It has, yeah, they have four wheels.
I think that is the question that I'm asking. It's the two non-tandem wheels that it seems like an odd definition. If it's supposed to include those types of vehicles, then it should be maybe two or more or something like that. I think would match my experience.
Can you get back to us on that at the next hearing?
Yes.
Or by writing? I think that's Representative Eastman asked an interesting question about where the mm-hmm. where the electric scooters in the grocery store fit in this rubric.
Yeah. Follow-up? Mm-hmm.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I'm thinking of you know, friends that I have who are very environmentally conscious and choose to produce their own vegetable oil, for example, and use that to power their transportation. I'm just wondering, kind of going back to an earlier part of the conversation, is it your belief that it's in the public interest to prioritize these electric assisted bicycles over, say, some type of oil or gas pedal assisted bicycles? And yeah, can you speak to that?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I will take a slight bit of liberty with the bill sponsor's thoughts on that, just to say that the initial impetus for this bill was to regulate another component of bicycles. And I think the questions about other types of fuel sources, aside from electric-assisted or electric bicycles, it hadn't entered the conversation before. I think it's an interesting conversation, but it's not something that the bill sponsor had previously looked into.
Thank you.
Representative Kirka?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to add to the point of yours and from Representative Eastman, not just for the issue question of electric grocery carts, if you will, for those who need assistance in grocery stores, but also electric-powered wheelchairs would come to mind.
Yeah, that's a good addition to that inquiry. Maybe you can get a more detailed definition of what are two non-tandem wheels. Representative Snyder.
I appreciate we'll be hearing more about this later, but perhaps a good place to start is AS 4545-600. It appears that electric grocery store scooters is actually defined as an assistive technology device. So that may be a good place to start.
Now, 45,600?
45,600.
I'm sorry, one more time.
45,600.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I noticed that in the previous version of the bill, we did define bicycle, and it kind of seemed to me like that might make sense since we're referring to bicycle, or at least using the word throughout the bill. I guess it just kind of seems to make sense to keep it there, but if there's a reason not to, I'd love to hear it.
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, I think there are just probably some, I can check back with legislative legal. When we had asked for this bill draft for the current legislature, we'd simply asked for the same language that we had asked to be added to statute in the previous legislature. And I do see that in the document you provided that there were two different drafters on these bills. So I can double check and see if there was any rationale there from legal.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I don't see any other questions from the committee. This time we are going to hold the bill for further review. Question for members of the committee in light of a lot of the discussion today. How much interest in there is in potentially offering amendments, and what's a reasonable deadline to get those amendments? I recognize that, as we all are aware, that the highest priority of the day is the budget. And is Thursday at 5 o'clock reasonable for purposes of amendments on this bill, or do you need more time to the extent you're interested? I guess the first question is, well, if you're interested, what's a reasonable time to get amendments back, as we don't have forever, but Representative Eastman, your thoughts?
Thank you. Yes, I think there will be interest in my office in offering one or more amendments, but I would like to hear back from either a combination of the sponsor or Ledge Legal to some of these questions to help in formulating the drafting.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we plan to, I mean, at this point, I may extend the deadline, but at this point, we'll set the deadline for 5 p.m. on Thursday. But let's plan to call this bill up on Wednesday, not for purposes of taking up amendments, but if you can provide answers to the questions that we had and provide further input from Ledge Legal. And then we can take it from there about whether we can make it all happen by Thursday at 5 for amendments, recognizing that all these plans could get scuttled by budget timing and everything else. Ms. Carrick.
Yes, to the chair. Thank you for indulging me. Pursuant to some of the conversation from the public testimony, there were just a couple of brief things if I could clarify for the committee.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
First off, Mr. Adderholt had spoken to a potential for this bill to designate e-bikes as being able to operate on bike paths or in areas where bicycles cannot. I just want to clarify that Section 2 of the bill states that e-bikes can be operated on ways, paths, or areas in tandem with how bicycles are regulated, meaning that any rules or statutes, municipal ordinances applying to where bicycles can be operated would also apply to e-bikes. So this would not regulate e-bikes in a way differently from how bicycles are currently regulated.
On that topic, if I were, say, the municipality of Anchorage and I wanted to say there's going to be certain trails in which we will not allow e-bikes but will allow all other bikes, do they have that current flexibility, or would they have that flexibility under the bill as proposed?
To the chair, they could have that flexibility. They would have to, the municipality of Anchorage has a separate definition for e-bikes, and so they could theoretically open up certain trails to e-bikes that they choose not to open up to bicycles. Okay. That could be a municipality decision.
That doesn't prevent that. That doesn't prevent them from doing so, if they can figure out the path to do it.
That, to the chair, that's my understanding. Okay. That would be correct. Another note for the committee was, in the previous committee of referral, there was a brief discussion about whether state parks or state lands could additionally regulate e-bikes differently than regular bicycles. And we did receive an answer on that, that through regulation, the Department of Natural Resources could regulate places where electric bicycles could be used differently from bicycles, basically stating that they would modify their definition of what motorized and non-motorized trails would include. And so that would be a way for state parks and or other state landowners to class out electric bicycles as they may want to do so in certain areas. And then just finally, I just had one further comment for the committee, that, you know, the Alaska e-bike law handout that we had before us today states at the top that an e-bike is defined as a motor-driven cycle. This is the opinion of People for Bikes. Obviously, in the experience of Representative Wohl's constituent, his experience was being told by law enforcement that they were to be regulated as motor vehicles. So clearly we do need clarity. I think the testimony really showed that today. And just to echo Mr. Loggeman's comments that without this clarity, it really is not, it's not simple. You can't define an e-bike as a motor-driven cycle, nor can you define it as a motor vehicle currently in statute.
All right.
Chairman.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that the sponsor did provide a 12-page document, which is almost entirely for People for Bikes, except for Mr. Adderholt's letter, which is in the last page. But People for Bikes does have 4 or 5 pages of proposed amendments to this bill. And I would ask Ms. Carrick, if are you going to would you like to see this bill more closely mimic what People for Bikes wants? Do you think that's sending us in the right direction?
Through the chair to Representative Drummond, our office should only have provided to the committee the handout from People for Bikes that says Alaska's e-bike law, not the additional documentation, although I believe People for Bikes provided that to the committee. And the view of the bill sponsor is to keep this bill limited to the current definitions for electric bicycles.
Okay. Thank you.
So just for clarity's sake, we had more than one person testify that they would prefer to go with the three-tier structure that is used in many other states. And the sponsor's position at this point is to not have the three-tier structure, and that hasn't changed.
That is correct.
And did you understand Representative Christ Tompkins' question to be essentially, should we go to the three-tier structure? Okay. So that may be an issue for us to take up at the next thing. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly don't want to override the will of the maker of the bill regarding the definition, but that's why I asked, you know, for the legal opinion of, is there a legal benefit of one versus the other? And I think that would be helpful to us as a committee to determine the direction that we want to take.
And I certainly think we should get that inquiry from Ledge Legal. I have this vague voice in the back of my head saying, well, that's a policy call for the legislature. Just I might be wrong, but I can almost hear it before we hear from them. But I agree with you. I'd like to hear their perspective on it. With that, we're getting back. We are going to adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Wednesday, May 5th at 1 p.m. As noted, the current deadline for amendments to House Bill 87 is 5 p.m. on Thursday, May 6th. We will certainly confirm that on Wednesday after we've heard more from Representative Wohl's office as to House Bill 87. And with that, we will adjourn for the day. The time is now 2:36 p.m. Actually, a short note. We are hearing a Senate bill relating to some medical malpractice issues. My office will include with the documents we send down a case from Minnesota called Warren v. Dinter. I would encourage you to spend the time reviewing Warren v. Dinter because that's the case on a national level that seems to be prompting interest in the legislation that we're going to see discussed on Wednesday. You don't need to go look the case up. We'll send it to you. And with that, we will really adjourn. It's 2:36 p.m.